Hello and welcome to The Leap of Faith. Well, some have described the events of this week in Rome as historic and critical to the future of the Catholic Church. Others are dismissing the event as a cynical cosmetic exercise. Almost 200 senior Catholic bishops from around the world have gathered in Rome for a summit called by Pope Francis to address clerical sexual abuse, according to some, the most severe crisis in the Church since the Reformation. On the programme this evening, we'll explore the impact of the meeting for the protection of minors on its second of 4 days and discuss what may happen next. To do this, with me in the studio is Mary Collins, herself a clerical abuse survivor, a leading campaigner and a former member of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors. We also have Father Joe MacDonald joining us from New York. Father Joe is parish priest at St. Matthew's Ballyfermot in Dublin and author of the book Why the Irish Church Deserves to Die. He too was abused as a child by a local priest while growing up in West Belfast. From Rome, we're joined by Chris White, a journalist with Crux, the US online newspaper, which focuses on news relating to the Catholic Church. And from California, Professor Donald Palmer from UC Davis Graduate School of Management. He's on the line too. Professor Palmer provides expert analysis of institutional cultures and led research in Australia's Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse. You're all very welcome. Well, let's go to Rome first, and at the Vatican is Crux journalist Chris White. Chris, can you gauge the mood for us surrounding this summit, both inside and outside the Vatican?
Well, I'd say that starting on Sunday, the narrative has been dominated by the many survivors that are here in Rome that are actively holding press conferences. And frankly, that's how it should be. And I think we saw some acknowledgement of that on the first day when the Pope said we have to listen to the cries of the survivors and the little ones. And I think the survivors' presence here is really something that cannot be and should not be ignored. And I think that will continue to be a large sort of dominating force in the coming days.
And for you as a journalist working with the press people over there from the Vatican, are they in the right headspace for this particular summit? Do they know the world is watching with such intensity?
I think there's a real sense that this is perhaps a defining, if not the defining moment in the Francis papacy. I mean, what we've seen on hand just since Monday when the first press conference was held was a real, you know, almost unprecedented step from the Vatican communications shop to live stream a number of these talks, to provide a digital press kit, to provide copies of some of these embargo texts the night before with talking points. I think they do realize just how critical this actually is. I do think there's a keen awareness of that all eyes are on Rome.
Mary Collins, I'll bring you in at this point as well. I said in my introduction as to whether some people would see this as an important event that would be changing for the history of the Church or a bit of a cynical exercise. Where do you stand on that?
I don't see it as a cynical exercise, and I don't believe it is a PR stunt. I think it is a sincere effort to bring the bishops from around the world up to speed on abuse. And the only thing I would say is that in 2019, it's very late for them to be doing this. You know, that bishops anywhere in the world wouldn't by now know the horror of abuse and the fact that they need to deal with it is hard to believe. But it is a crossroads, I believe. What comes at the end of it will be the most important thing. If it ends with more promises and just reassurances, then I believe it will have missed, the Church will have missed an opportunity to really show the world they're getting to grips with this whole issue.
Chris, in Rome, are the Church still sensitive to criticism of any reporting of this event?
Well, I think there is an awareness to sort of, get the facts straight. You know, a dominant storyline that emerged yesterday was there was discussion both from the Pope and then at the press conference yesterday with Bishop Charles Scicluna about whether or not names of credibly accused priests should be published, which, of course, you know, I cover the U.S. Church and nearly 100 dioceses have published lists of their names of accused priests. And we got the impression in initially yesterday that this was a practice that was going to be encouraged to come to a halt. But then today, in his morning remarks, Cardinal Supich of Chicago said that, you know, indicated that these lists are good and healthy exercise, but they couldn't get in the way of due process. So by my calculation, this was an effort to sort of offer a course correction from yesterday's remarks. So I think it is a sign that these organizers and participants are monitoring the what the press is reporting on very closely, and it is shaping to some extent the discussion in the room.
Father Joe McDonald is also on the line with us on the program this evening. Joe, this is your organization that we're talking about this evening. You're there on the inside. What are your feelings about this particular summit and its efficacy?
Yeah, well, I think I would agree very much with Marley. I don't see it as a cynical exercise. I actually believe the Pope is genuinely agonizing over this. And, you know, I believe he wants to effect change. However, I really believe he's very up against it. I think the level of dysfunctionality within the institution is so huge that I don't have huge hopes for the gathering. I would love, I am a bit encouraged. I heard yesterday some talk about this word that the Pope wanted things to be concrete and concreteness, and I think there were 21 things that he shared with them. That's hopeful, and I would want to remain hopeful. But you see, I think the problem for me, what we're doing when we try to tackle the area of sexual abuse, we're trying to tackle an aspect. Now, it's a very important and a very significant aspect, but the problem is much, much bigger than that. I think our problem is around both how we use or abuse power in a broader sense, and also the Catholic brand, and I'm of particular interest in the Irish Catholic brand of human sexuality, which I would love to see that broader thing looked at, because if we just keep, you see how difficult the church finds it to respond to the particular topic of sexual abuse. And I think there is a genuineness at this stage. Some of it has been brought about, of course, by very, very strong lobbying and proper pressure put on by people like Mary, who have, you know, gone to such an length, heroic efforts for years now. I sometimes wonder how she keeps going, but herself and others, you know, are and I know Mary doesn't like this type of talk about her and so on, but, you know, and I promise I won't begin the process for beatification for her, but in my view, she deserves it. She's a woman of heroic virtue. And that, to me, has done us a huge service. I didn't always get thanks for it, but I just think the problem is it's almost like, for me, that we have this recurring horrible rash that flares up. But the rash has been neglected, and in the rash, you see, it's now at a point where it's oozing pus. Mm-hmm. It's subdurating. But what do? We keep applying ointment. When are we going to do the blood tests? When are we going to see, you know, sexual abuse in its widest context? We have stuff now about the relationship, the power differential between priests, for example, religious sisters, and so on. Where does it end, you know? And the I hate this phrase, the average Catholic, and I mean, what does that mean? The person that's coming faithfully to the church, as I see them in St. Matthew's week after week, there's a terrible, and I'll finish on this, a terrible tension, a terrible ambivalence, and it's in me. I love the church, and I am passionately committed to serving the church to the end of my days. But my goodness, can it be ugly? Can it be really terribly ugly? And how do we, you know, find a way, those of us who are committed to following Jesus within the Catholic tradition, how do we find a way that we remain intact that we remain together, that we, you know, I'll come back again to my, you know, integrity. You've heard enough.
Thank you very much, Father Joe. I agree very much with what Father Joe has said. You know, I think there's no point sticking plasters on this problem. The church needs to be looking at a very deep level into the dysfunction that is there. I saw it close up when working in the Commission and the Vatican, the abuse of power, the politics, the faction fighting. They all play into this dysfunction. And at a much deeper level, of course, there are areas that I, as a layperson, would not be able to look at in any depth, but those within the church could. And I really do believe that the causes of these problems, the culture, clericalism and attitude to sex and the actual way that young men are formed in the seminary is extremely important. We can't just look at the results, we have to look at the causes.
Well, when Australian officials sought an expert on organisational behaviour who could examine the culture of institutions that have failed to protect children, they called on Professor Don Palmer. And Don is on the line from California with us on the programme. Don, thank you for joining us. We've heard two people there, Father Joe and Mary, talking about going up against the organisation, going up against a culture. Can you expand on that a little bit for us about how a total organisation like the church can be a very big adversary?
Well, I want to begin by saying that you have three experts on the church on the line, and then you have me, who really looks at the church from some distance. But in that regard, I see it as an organization which has a number of attributes, and one of which you are, I think, alluding to, which is that it has many elements of a total institution, which means it enjoys a considerable isolation from civil society. And that has many ramifications for the child sexual abuse scandal that we've seen unfold over the last 20 years. And one of those is that it has a world view which is somewhat unaligned with civil society. And for example, as an American bishop famously said, the church does not do crime, it does sin. And so it approaches sexual abuse, or at least has historically, as a problem of the soul rather than as a victimization of a child or youth. And that affects how it has dealt with individual instances of abuse, how it's dealt with perpetrators. So that's an element of the culture which, in this case, impedes the response to abuse when it is detected.
Don, with your psychologist hat on for a moment, can you expand a little bit on the concept of narcissism and the correlation between that and big organizations and almost being a place of safety for narcissists?
Well, that's a good question. There's actually a fair amount of dispute within the field of psychology as to whether narcissism is a personality characteristic. I would go back instead to what Father Joe said about the abuse of power. There is very good research now on the impact that the possession of power has on those who have it. It creates among other things, a sense of moral superiority, which can both give perpetrators a feeling of license, that it's within their realm to violate the rights of others, but it also gives a sense that when detected by peers, it's sort of an inside problem that people can deal with without having to bring it to the attention of others. That's where I would go.
Chris, I would go back to you in Rome. In fact, I think we can hear the traffic in the background from your line. It's nice and bright and fresh. Is that, you know, well, you've reported on this as well. Have you come across this idea that people can have a two-world perspective on their actions?
Yeah, I think Don is right on the money here.
And earlier this week, I spoke with Archbishop Mark Coleridge. He's the Archbishop of Brisbane, and he represents the Australian bishops here in Rome. And he said, in my own thinking, I've sort of evolved from thinking of abuse as a sin to a crime to a cultural problem, and a cultural problem within the Catholic priesthood itself. And he said, we need to think critically about the way in which we form men for the priesthood, that we recruit them for this, how our own teachings about sexuality sort of could perhaps lead to abuse of power. And that's his sort of clarion call this week, he said, is to try to get to the root of these cultural problems.
Father Joe McDonald, have you come across this in your experience? The ability, for example, for somebody to rationalize their behavior under the rules of the difference between, say, for example, chastity and celibacy?
Yes. You see, I think, to answer your question, this is why I have this difficulty about the work that's gone on, that it's set up for failure. And I know that sounds very harsh, but I actually don't mean it in a harsh sense. I'm trying to be objective about this. We continue to operate as a male-dominated hierarchical church. So before we move at all, we have water in our boots. You know, we don't have a balanced perspective when we're at the heart of things, especially, I mean, when you step back from it, we're so close to it, we don't see it at all, that we are discussing human sexuality, and we're discussing within human sexuality the abuse of power that makes that not beautiful, the beautiful gift that it is, but we make it ugly. And when we do that, you see, yes, of course, that's a sin, but it's more than that. That we cannot simply say this is a sin, and that's very often a defensive. This is part of my concern about the dysfunctionality, the defensive nature, the paranoid position that the church adopts. And when we go into the paranoid position, and Don is much more expertise, and he'll forgive my blundering around here in psychology. But the paranoid position, then we're lashing out, we're defending, we're seeking to offload our responsibility. And even there recently, I heard, I don't know what it said in the past few days, the whole question of homosexuality. Like the fact that we would try to attach responsibility in a general way to the gay community, well, it's as offensive as it is predictable. I'm really trying to articulate that our problem, I think, in trying to move into dealing with this with any degree of efficiency or integrity is actually disabled by the intrinsic nature, and that is evident in how we're set up, the male dominance, the lack of female governance, you know, the sharing of governance of the church with women. We can't get our head round that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I want to bring Mary Collins in on this one, Joe, if I could, because we've heard this argument of the homosexual argument that's put forward. It almost, though, at the same time, deletes the possibility of any recognition for any woman or girl that was abused in the process.
Mary. Before I answer that, Michael, could I just quickly go back to a couple of things that have been said? The celibacy and chastity. I mean, I've heard of abusers within the church who believe they're holding to their vow of celibacy, and yet they are abusing children in the most horrific ways. And that is something that is very hard to understand from the outside, but within the church needs to be looked at. Something that Chris said about Cardinal Coleridge in Australia, about the fact that the church has moved from looking on abuse as a sin to a crime and now looking at it as a cultural problem. Sadly, I would clarify that some people in the church have moved along that timeline, while many others are still stuck at the same level.
You would
level.
Contend that there's a cultural idea that there are still some countries that are bishops from those countries who do not perceive there to be a problem in the first place.
There are some who do not believe there's a problem in the first place. There was a Ghanaian bishop from Africa the other day who said it's there's no abuse in his country because children are looked on as a gift from God. I mean, that is delusional. And he, you know, so many in parts of the world would still see it as a sin, and that the perpetrator could repent, be forgiven, and then continue on. It's not something that we can just assign to the past.
Could I just
the homosexual thing? Mm. I think there is an effort by some in the church on the very conservative side who are coming out and trying to make this a homosexual issue. They have a sort of homophobic agenda. And while it is true that fewer females are abused than males, it is horrendous. It is so painful and hurtful for an abuse victim like myself to be completely airbrushed out of the picture as though we didn't exist. There are obviously homosexual predators, heterosexual predators, but that does not mean that it is a homosexual problem, that if there are no gay priests, there's no abuse. And I just say from a female point of view, it is painful and hurtful every time I see this being said.
Don, looking at the organisation, again with your organisational psychology hat on, where is it in this timeline of where it's going? Is it at an end stage? Could it actually survive this process? What do you think?
Well, that's as we say in my field, an empirical question, mm-hmm. Which is we're watching the events unfold, and I strongly suspect it will survive, but the question is for how long it will survive in this wounded state. And there's a big problem for the church, which is because it is so centralized with respect to major policy decisions, the fact that it is a total institution, the leadership is relatively insulated from the lower level clergy and the laity. And I think one indication of that was how survivors were incorporated into the commission's deliberations on the first day, which is by videotape. That much of what's going on right now
kept is an arm's length.
Yes. And so so people like Chris, I assume, cannot directly observe what's happening, but depend a lot on what the church's communication and public relations staff provides him.
Could I ask you to speculate, though, if you were looking at another organization, not the church, and you were asked in a consultancy role to initiate a recovery, what would you have a top line for us?
Oh, boy. So you want me to reform the Catholic Church?
Mm-hmm.
in the next 2 or 3 minutes.
With coffee in your hand, yeah.
Yeah, well, so I think one model is what's happened to the USA Gymnastics in the United States, which has suffered its own scandal, child sexual abuse. And in that case, there's been a thorough removal of top leadership, and I don't see how that can happen in the Catholic Church, given the way in which people are allocated to positions. Since in the church, it's people aren't just put into position by virtue of their bureaucratic competence, but rather in terms of their
it's not a meritocracy
linked to God. Mm. Yeah. So I think what I see is a tremendous amount of inertia. On the other hand, very briefly, it's very clear that Father Joe and Mary are committed to the principles the church stands for. And for that reason, I have hope that the church will be able to reform itself. But there's just tremendous inertia.
Well, as we come to the end of the programme, let's go to all of our contributors for a final word as to what possibly you believe would happen next. I go to you, Chris. What's the next step in the process?
Well, the thing I'm monitoring most closely, perhaps, is what sort of guidelines are put in place for bishop accountability. Cardinal Supich this morning outlined sort of some first steps toward that that, you know, would propose some, you know, fairly substantial changes to the church's norms on this issue. But the Pope's closing address on Sunday is really going to be his State of the Union. And to the extent that there are new announcements or just promises, will be the way the history of this summit is written.
Don Palmer, you're the, as you say at the beginning, the outsider on this. But what do you believe will actually be the next step that you could predict?
Well, since I'm not a student of the church, as your other three guests are, it's hard for me to predict what will happen, but I can say what I think needs to happen, which is what we've found with other organizations, is that unless the entire organization, that is, people low down in the organization, are involved in policy formation, there isn't much hope for change. And so involving people like Mary and Father Joe and members of the laity in solving this problem is absolutely necessary.
Father Joe MacDonald.
What will happen? Well, what I hope will happen is that the Holy Spirit will continue to bring this abusive institution to its knees, will punch holes in it in the way that only the Holy Spirit can, particularly when she's dancing her creative dance. And what will happen, please God, will be emergence of a much, much smaller, humble, inclusive, female and male led faith community, and we'll be able to have a funeral rite, a beautiful funeral rite, probably in Latin, with loads of incense for the institution.
Mary Collins, have you more work to do after this?
Yes. Today they are, I believe, talking about transparency, and the first transparency we need is proper details about what is being put in place to hold bishops and church leaders accountable, and that we will be told when someone has a finding of guilt against them, and that will be made public. I think the Pope, and I'm not obviously predicting what he will say on Sunday, but I believe he will come out with very, very strong words. Very strong. But we've had strong words in the past. What I want to hear him coming out with is a timeline for action. Concrete action, as he has said himself. A time and a date as to when proper safeguarding is going to be put in place, proper accountability is going to be put in place, and everyone universally is going to be called on to commit themselves in the church to implementing all that. So that is my hope. But yes, I will still be around, still talking, I suppose, but I hope not in another 20 years.
Mary Collins, Father Joe MacDonald, Chris White in Rome, and Professor Don Palmer on the line from California. Thank you for joining us tonight. The conference concludes on Sunday in Rome with a closing address by Pope Francis. From all of us here this evening, Noel Roberts on sound, our BCO Denise Davis, our producer Sheila O'Callaghan, and myself, Michael Cummin. Good night.
Well, you can hear that programme again on Sunday morning at 10:30 on RTE Radio 1 Extra, or anytime on the RTE Radio Player. And if you'd like to get in touch with the programme, you can email faith@rte.ie.